We present your speaker, Don Blackwell.
I invite you to open your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. We're going to study tonight about an old man, a man who had reached the end of his life. Looking back over the years, he realized that he had largely wasted his life. He had squandered the years. We're going to study tonight about a man who is very much like many of the men in the world today who look back over their lives, realizing that they've wasted them, realizing that they have spent their lives searching, trying to fill a void, trying to fill an emptiness, trying to find something that was missing that they've never been able to grasp. Of course, the man that we're talking about tonight is named Solomon, and the book is the study of Ecclesiastes. Now, when we get to Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 1, I want you to picture in your mind a very old man, a man who is full of regret, who is pained by the lost years, the years that he did not serve the Lord, the years that he cannot get back, and then listen to him in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 1. Solomon says, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh." Now, what is Solomon saying here? He is saying, "Listen to me, young people. Young people, listen to me. Listen to me while you are still young, while you still have your whole life ahead of you. Listen to me before the evil days come and your body is worn out and the years of your life are drawing to an end and you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" He is saying, "Listen to me before you get in the shape that I'm in and your years are gone and you too sit back with pain and regret for the years that you can't get back." Listen to this description, in fact. He says, "Remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, 'I have no pleasure in them,' while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain." He talks about the sun and the stars being darkened. He said, you get old and it gets hard to see. You begin losing your sight. Verse 3, "In the days that the keepers of the house shall tremble," probably talking about the hands. When a person gets older, sometimes their hands tremble. He says, "And the strong men shall bow themselves." The limbs don't have the strength that they did when you were a young person. He says, "And the grinders cease because they are few." Probably talking about teeth. Losing the teeth are not what they used to be. "And those that look out of the windows be darkened." Probably a reference to the eyes. "And the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low. And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and the daughters of music shall be brought low." He says you shall rise up at the voice of the bird. Probably talking about the fact that you don't sleep as well as you did when you were young. "Every little sound disturbs you. You don't rest well. The daughters of music shall be brought low." Talking about the loss of hearing. "And when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fears shall be in the way." He's talking about the fact you're afraid of heights. You might fall. You don't have the balance and the steadiness that you did as a young person. "And the almond tree shall flourish." Probably a reference here to the hair. Talking about the fact that you get old and your hair begins to look like the almond tree. Your hair turns white. "And the grasshopper shall be a burden." Even something very light is difficult, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about in the streets. Now, he gives us an interesting picture here of old age. He says, "This is my situation. I am old. I have reached the end of my life." And he said, "I want to tell you some things, and I want you to learn the lesson before you are sitting in the situation I'm in, before you're in the shoes that I'm in, and I want you to take it very seriously." Somebody might say, how did Solomon get in this situation? Where did the years go? How did Solomon get to the point that he had wasted all of his life? That's what I want to talk about tonight. I want you to picture this. Here's an old man, Solomon. Picture him in your mind. Now, I want you to roll back the clock of time in your mind from this old man and go back through the years to picture this young man, Solomon. Here's this man who has his whole life ahead of him, but there's something missing. There's an emptiness in his life. There is a void that's there. There's a peace, a happiness, a fulfillment, a purpose that's not there. And he's searching the world trying to do something about it. Now, at one point, of course, we know he was faithful to the Lord. But apparently he left that. And he began searching this world trying to find purpose and pleasure and happiness. Friends, that's the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, what is the purpose of this book? The purpose of the book of Ecclesiastes is to show us that everything is vanity except for fearing God and keeping His commandments. And Solomon is sharing with us his knowledge on this subject. Now, was the book of Ecclesiastes written by inspiration? Sure it was. Was it the words of God? Sure it was. Sure it is. But you know what? The things that Solomon writes in this book, he knows firsthand. He experienced them. He lived them. You know, it's very interesting when you read this book because it sounds like it was almost written for our generation specifically. And really it was. That's the power of the Word of God because it's always able to do that. It is relevant for every age. And so what I want to do tonight is to examine several lessons that Solomon learned. And I want to look at some warnings that he gives to young people of every generation. All right, let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and begin this study. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Here Solomon is going to set the stage for what he actually did in his life. Ecclesiastes 1:1 says, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Now what is Solomon saying? Solomon is saying, I have tried everything that this world has to offer, and what it amounts to is nothing. This world gives you nothing but emptiness. Now drop down to verse 9. I want you to see the relevancy of this book. He says, "The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun." Solomon says there's nothing new out there. It's all been tried before, but every generation has those people who are going to repeat the cycle, and they're going to search this world for that which it cannot give. You know, I think sometimes young people think, well, you know, my parents and my grandparents and the elderly people in the congregation, they don't know what it's like for me today. They don't understand. It's a different time now. Solomon says, no, it's not. They do understand. You see what he says here? There is no new thing under the sun. That which has been is that which shall be. He says it is the same. And Solomon is saying, I know what I'm talking about. I'm an aged man, but you listen to me because I've been there and I have done it, and it is no new thing that's come along, and you're going to experience the same things that I have experienced. And he says, I don't want you to learn it the same way that I have learned it. Now here's Solomon. He's a philosopher. And he looks at life and he says there is nothing worthwhile. There is nothing that makes sense. And finally, as a result, he says, I hate life. If you look at chapter 2 and verse 17, Solomon says, therefore I hated life because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity. Solomon is saying life is empty. I have found no meaning, no purpose in life. And ladies and gentlemen, separate and apart from God, nobody ever will find a purpose. And that's the point of the book. That's the point that Solomon is making. Now, I want for us to notice tonight some of the things that Solomon tried. Some of the things he tested out in this old world looking for happiness, and things that did not give him an answer. And then we're going to look at the final conclusion that he draws after trying all of these things. Every point tonight is going to begin with the letter W. Here's the first thing that Solomon tried. Solomon first tried wisdom. He tried wisdom. That is, maybe in a lot of knowledge and a lot of secular education, maybe there I'll find the answer to life's problems. And Solomon made that his goal for a long time. If he could just learn more, maybe that could solve the problems in life. But it didn't work that way. And you know, there's a generation of people who thinks that way today. If we could just learn more, we would have the answer to all of our problems. And yet, I don't know if we've ever been more knowledgeable than we are right now. And at the same time, I don't know that we have ever had greater problems than we have right now. And so, secular education is not the answer. And Solomon found that out. Now, Solomon was a wise man. All you've got to do is read the book of Proverbs and you read Ecclesiastes. You'll see he knew all about the field of biology. He knew all about psychology. He knew about astronomy. He knew about philosophy. No doubt he was a great admirer and lover of art and music, and he had great skills and achievements in the realm of education. But despite his educational achievements, he never found the meaning of life. That never brought him satisfaction. In fact, he goes on to say, in much wisdom, there is much grief. In chapter 12 and verse 12, he says, "Of the making of many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness to the flesh." He said, that's my conclusion about secular wisdom. And so Solomon tried wisdom, that is, secular wisdom, but it didn't satisfy him. And I want to tell you tonight that if that is your goal, if your highest goal in life is to have secular education, it's never going to satisfy you. Friends, worldly knowledge has got to be in subjection to biblical truth. Otherwise, you become what Paul was talking about in Romans 1:21 when he said, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Some people become so wise with secular education that what they do is make themselves a fool in the eyes of God. And if we do that, we have missed the very point of why we're here. Well, Solomon tried wisdom. Secondly, I want you to notice Solomon tried wit. That is, he tried humor. Look at chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. He said, "In mine heart I said, go to now, and I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it?" Now, what's Solomon saying here? He's saying, well, I've been too serious. I need to have a little fun. And so I will give myself to pleasure. Maybe I will find the answer there. Well, he tried humor. He tried wit. He tried laughter. But he did not find the answer there either. Now, somebody says, now, preacher, you saying there's something wrong with humor? No, that's not at all what we're saying. Humor is very good. Humor is beneficial at the appropriate time. But, you know, there are some things and some times when we need to wipe the smile off our face and think very soberly and think very seriously about our situation and about our soul. But you know, some people don't understand that. Some people don't want to they don't want to take life seriously. They don't want to think seriously. They just want to laugh away their problems. Sometimes I've seen people who will sit in the assembly and they will laugh and cut up, and even during the invitation song they'll do that. You know why I think they do that? I think they don't want to face what's being offered at that time. I think they don't want to face the change that God requires in their life, and so they just laugh about it. And they'll get other people to laugh with them so they don't have to face it. They don't want to think soberly about where their soul might spend eternity. You know, another reason I think sometimes people laugh, I think some people just treat life as a big joke because they're really hurting inside. And somehow they think they can laugh away their problems. They can laugh at, and get other people to laugh with them, and they think humor is just going to take care of everything. I heard about a man who went to see the doctor. And he told the doctor, he said, "Doctor, you have got to help me." He said, "I am so depressed inside." He said, "I have no happiness in my life. Life has no purpose. I don't know what to do." He said, "I don't even want to continue with life. I am that sad within." And the doctor told him, he said, "Sir, I can't write you a prescription for that." He said, "But I've got something in mind that might help." He said, "You see, the circus is in town. And I went down there last night," and he said, "there is a clown down there. He will make you laugh. You will not believe it. You will come away with your sides hurting. You will feel so good. You'll just enjoy yourself. That's what you need to do." And the man said, "I can't do that." And the doctor said, "Sure you can. Just go down there. You'll see. You'll laugh." And he said, "You don't understand, doctor. I can't do that. You see, I am that clown." Now, what's the point? The point is, on the outside, he was making other people laugh. He was appearing to be something that he wasn't at all, but inside he was hurting, and he was not happy at all. He made other people laugh, but deep down inside he was empty. Deep down inside he was lacking something that laughter cannot fill. Now, is anything wrong with laughter? No, there's not. The Bible even tells us laughter is good. The same Solomon wrote, "A merry heart doeth good like medicine." Proverbs 17 and verse 22. But I want to tell you tonight, that's not what life's all about. It won't fulfill the emptiness in your soul that God has put in every one of us. It won't fulfill the longing, the desire that God has put in the creation He calls man. Well, Solomon tried wisdom. He tried wit. Thirdly, I want you to know Solomon tried wine. If you look at chapter 2 and verse 3, he says, "I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold to folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men, which they should do under heaven all the days of their life." Maybe he could drown his sorrows in alcohol. Now, how many people want to do that? Maybe the answer to my problem is in the bottom of the bottle. So many people think that's where they're going to find the answer. But folks, you know the problem with that is once you've allowed yourself to drink that stuff, and once you've allowed yourself to become drunken, you still have the same problems. It doesn't take... Now you've got another problem, in fact. It hasn't solved anything. The answer is not in the wine. It's not in alcohol. But Solomon says, I tried it. And yet Proverbs 20 and verse 1 says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and he who is deceived thereby is not wise. Brethren, I don't know what more warning the Lord can give us than that. Alcohol is wrong internally, it's wrong externally, and it is wrong eternally. It will destroy your soul, and it will not solve your problems. And yet Solomon says, I tried it. But he said, it's not the answer. And I tell you what, if you're a person traveling down that kind of road tonight, you've got real problems. And young men and young ladies, if you're here and you're entertaining the thought of having a relationship with somebody like that, you need to get out of it right now. Because you are going to be having a life that is miserable if you've got to live with that kind of stuff. And I tell you something else. If there was ever anything that was unchristlike, you ever been around a drunkard? You want to talk about something that is unchristlike? It is the behavior of a drunkard. Well, Solomon said, I gave myself to alcohol, at least for a while. He said, but it didn't solve my problems. It didn't bring me happiness. It didn't fulfill the emptiness or fill the emptiness in me. It didn't give me meaning or purpose that I was searching for in life. And so he tried something else. He tried something that a lot of people today think is the answer. He tried wisdom and wit and wine. And then he tried wealth. So many people think, if I could just reach a certain level financially, I would be happy. If I could have more things, if I could get more stuff, if I could just move into that house, I would be happy. And I got to say, I've been tempted to think that lately, but if I could just move into that house, I would be happy. But what happens when you move into that house? If I could just have that car, I'd be happy. That's all I need. Friends, that's not the answer. Look at verse 4. Solomon says, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. He said, I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith with the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem. This is a rich, rich man. He said, I had more than anybody. Verse 8, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and provinces, and I got me men singers and women singers. Folks, he could have had his own concert right in his backyard. He had men singers and women singers, and he says, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts, so that I was great and increased more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Here is a man who had everything that money could buy him, except one thing. It couldn't buy him happiness. It couldn't buy him happiness, and it could not buy him eternal security, because neither one of those things can be purchased with money. I want to ask you the question tonight. How wealthy are you? How wealthy are you? You ever think about that question? How wealthy are you? To answer that question, you need to think about it this way. You take away everything that money can buy, and you take away everything that death can take away from you, and that's how wealthy you are. Take away everything money can buy, everything that death can take away. What do you have left? Your soul. That's it. Your soul. That's the only thing. And that's why the Bible spends so much time pointing out the necessity of guarding our souls above everything else. It's the only thing. It's the only measure of our wealth is, have I laid up treasure in heaven? Solomon says, I tried it. I had what this world had to offer. I had more than anybody. But it didn't satisfy him. You know, I heard a story about a man who was very rich. He was nearing the end of his life, and he got this quirky idea. And so he went to some of his family, and he said, I want you to do something for me. He said, before I die, I want you to take all my money, and I want you to put it in the attic. And he said, then when I die and my soul goes up, I can get my money on the way by. And they thought, well, you know, we'll appease him here. He's old and he's dying. And so they did. Several months passed and he died. And after that, one of them got to thinking about it. You know, all that money's in the attic. And so they went up in the attic, and sure enough, it was still there. And someone made the observation, maybe we should have put it in the basement. Now, you know, that's lighthearted, but if that's where a person's focus is, that's where he's headed. because a person who's laying up treasures in heaven is not worried about the physical possessions of this earth. That's not his focus. That's not what's important to him. And that's not where he's turning to for happiness. In fact, in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 10, listen to what Solomon says and see if this is not absolutely on the money, to see what you have observed in your life. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This also is vanity. Now what's he saying? He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. In other words, if money is what you think is going to make you happy, it never is going to do it. You love silver, you'll get more silver, but you'll just want more silver. He that loves abundance, he's not going to be happy with increase. He said his emptiness. And that is why John D. Rockefeller, who at one time was one of the richest men on the face of the earth, about the turn of the century, somebody asked him the question one time, Mr. Rockefeller, who incidentally was already a billionaire, they asked him, Mr. Rockefeller, how much money will you have before you're satisfied? You know what he said? Just a little bit more. Right? Just a little bit more. He already had billions, but he wanted more. You know why? Because he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. Why wasn't he happy? Because billions don't satisfy. And folks, that's exactly what Solomon was saying. He had tried wealth, but it did not satisfy him. Number five, I want you to notice, he tried wisdom and he tried wit and he tried wine and he tried wealth. Number five, he tried wantonness. Wantonness, that is immorality. That is, he said, whatever desire I have, whatever lust I have, I'm just going to indulge it. A lot of people live that way, don't they? You look at what's going on in Hollywood and you see if that's not the philosophy of a lot of people. Look at verse 10. Solomon says, whatever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not from my heart any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all labor, and this is the portion of my labor. Whatever my eyes desired, he said, I did it. Whatever joy my heart wanted, I did it. I indulged myself. Now you see what he's saying here? I got whatever I wanted. I did whatever I felt like, whatever I thought would feel good. I did that. You know what a good definition of sin is? I think it's in this statement. I will do what I want to do. Selfishness. I'm going to do my own thing. But friends, I tell you this. Giving in to your wants and to your lust is not going to bring you happiness in life. But that's the way a lot of people live. You know, the Bible tells us that Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. 1 Kings 11 and verse 3. Why do you think that is? Now, I know some people will say, well, you know, it was political alliances and things like that, and I suspect that was part of it. But I think it's part of this. He said, whatever lust, whatever desire I had, I gave into it. Solomon was looking to different women. He was looking to sexual relations, trying to bring himself happiness, trying to find a cure for this emptiness. And sometimes people get that way. Sometimes a man will decide, I would be happy if I had that other woman. And so he'll throw away his marriage and he'll go after her. And many a young person has done this same thing. Many a young girl has sacrificed her purity on the altar of a young boy's lust. Now why? Because she's looking for happiness. She's looking for somebody to tell her that he loves her. You know, I heard about one young Christian girl and another girl that went to school with her who was a very ungodly individual came to this Christian girl and she said, I can't believe how stuck up you are. She said to this Christian girl, see, this girl was quite pleased. She was quite proud of the fact that she would go out with as many boys as would take her out. And she didn't mind the fact that she slept around and things of that nature. And she mocked her Christian friend because she wouldn't do that. And she said, you don't know what you're missing in life. You need to live a little. And finally, this Christian young lady couldn't take it anymore. And she looked her right in the eyes and said, let me tell you something. Anytime I want to, I can become like you, but never again can you become like me. And that's true. Never again can that girl regain her purity from the standpoint that she once had. Now, she can be forgiven. There's no doubt about that. She can correct her life. She can go to heaven. But she can never regain that purity that she once had. Well, Solomon said, I tried living that way. He said, I tried every pleasure, every indulgence this world had to offer. He says, and I came up empty. And he says, therefore, I hate life. I understand what he's saying. If I had tried everything this world had to offer me, I had all the riches, all the wealth, engaged, involved myself in every lust and pleasure that this world had to offer, and I was still miserable, I think I would say that. I hate life. Well, then he tried something else. The sixth thing that Solomon tried that didn't bring him happiness was work. The word work. How many people have immersed themselves in their work thinking that that's what life is all about? Look at chapter 2 and verse 11. Solomon said, "Then I looked on all of the work that my hands had wrought, and on all of the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, it was all vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." Solomon became discouraged because after he had worked all of his life, he realized he was going to die and it was going to be left to somebody else. And that just frustrated him. He said, "It's worthless. It's him. I've done all this and somebody else is going to get it." And friends, if your career is your chief goal, then you've got your priorities messed up. Sure, it might occupy your time, but it's not going to bring you true lasting happiness. In fact, I think that's why some people work so much, because it occupies their mind. It takes their mind off of things that they need to think about. And Solomon says, "Though I worked hard, I still missed the purpose of life." Now, Solomon had tried all of these things, but they had left him empty. I can understand why he said, "I hate life." But then he tried one more thing. Finally, he tried worship. After he had tried everything else and come up empty, Solomon turned to God. And it is only then that he realized the purpose of life. You know, sometimes people will ask the question, "Do you think Solomon's going to go to heaven? You think we'll see Solomon in heaven one day?" I say, I think so. I think we are. Now, I don't know that, but I get the impression we will, because when we reach the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, after he had wasted his life trying all of these things, when he gets to the end, what does he say? He says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth." He says, "Learn a lesson from me as I'm an old man reaching the end of my life. Learn from my mistakes." And then he shares this with us. He says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man." The King James says the whole duty of man. The word duty has been added. I like it better to read it, "This is the whole of man." In other words, this is what man is all about. This is why you're here. He says, "I've tried all of these things. They don't matter. They left me empty. The whole reason that I exist, the whole purpose that I have for being on this planet is to fear God and keep His commandments. And if I miss that, I have missed it all. I have missed the purpose in life. I'm going to have an emptiness in my heart, in my soul." God created man with a desire to worship Him. And if we don't do that, there's always going to be a void there, because I am neglecting the most important thing that I have in my existence. Solomon said, friends, that is what it's all about.